CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers. Lee, would you introduce our sponsors?
Absolutely. Today's show is brought to you by Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney as outstanding and excellent. Also, SAP Business by Design, a fully integrated business management software solution designed for small to mid-sized companies that want the benefits of large-scale business applications without the need for large IT infrastructure.
And this week's CFO News. This month, the United States Department of Labor detailed the median number of years that wage and salary workers had been with their current employer, referred to internally as employee tenure, was 4.4 in January 2010. The increase in tenure among those at work reflects in part relatively large job losses among less senior workers in the most recent recession in the United States. Additionally, from January 2007 through 2009 December, 6.9 million workers were displaced from jobs that they had held for at least 3 years. That number was nearly twice as many as for the survey period previously, which covered January 2005 to December 2007. And as a brief update, in January 2010, about half of those displaced workers were now re-employed back into the workforce. Good news there. Well, today, CFO Radio is joined by Mike Tarrant to discuss the role of the CFO treasurer in a nonprofit environment. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks, Lorraine. Glad to be here.
Well, Mike, you're the treasurer of the Georgia Cancer Foundation. You are a financial planner, and except for 1 year at a bank, you've worked as a financial planner your entire career, and you say you love it. Love to hear that. You began specializing in financial planning for pharmacists, having been connected to the state association by a particular client, and that niche has grown to such an extent that now you are recognized around the state as the financial planner for pharmacists.
That's correct.
Well, Mike, tell us a little bit about your background, and let's start by lessons learned. I'm going to go way back for you on this. Something in your bio intrigued me. Earlier in your career, you entered financial planning as a para-planner. What is a para-planner?
Great question. No one's really heard of that before. If you think in the legal profession of a paralegal who provides assistance to an attorney, does a lot of the background work, actually helps put some of the casework together for the attorney, a paraplanner does the same thing for a financial planner. So a paraplanner will organize the data, will meet with the client as well, kind of identify some of the issues, and then bring some preliminary recommendations back to that financial planner. So the paraplanner is the financial planner's go-to person for all things administrative.
So very much analytical, very much looking at analytical forward-looking data?
That's correct.
Interesting. Well, today you run a financial planning practice and you also devote your time to the Georgia Cancer Foundation as its treasurer. What led you to volunteer for the organization?
Thank you for asking that. Actually, there's two things that led to that. Number one was my grandmother back in the 1970s had breast cancer, and that was before treatment was as good as it is today. So she was given 6 months to live, but because of her deep faith, she actually lived another 6 years. Of course, during that time, though, as a young boy, I kind of watched her waste away, so it left an impression on me about cancer. Secondly, a client of mine who's now the foundation's president asked me to become involved when he heard about my cancer story, but also when I heard about his. In his 30s, he contracted cancer unknown to him and basically on an airplane collapsed. And he went in to see the doctor, and they found cancer in his chest, and he was cured within 6 months. But because of that, he developed a passion for helping people who did not know they had cancer.
My goodness, wow. And I, too, have been affected by cancer mm-hmm. in my family. My mother passed away from a brain tumor, mm-hmm. and one of those situations where you don't get a lot of notice sometimes.
That's right.
Unfortunately, cancer affects a lot of people. Some of the recent statistics that I have heard and read, there was a nationally broadcast cancer awareness TV program about a month ago on the television, and it stated that something like between, depending on your gender and where you lived in the country, that between a third to 50% of us would be affected in one way or another by cancer.
I agree, definitely. We see that all the time.
Well, congratulations to you to bringing what has been a very tragic side of your family history and making some really positive changes. So you're treasurer for the Georgia Cancer Foundation. What exactly does that mean? Let's start by maybe talking about what is the role of a treasurer for a nonprofit versus that of a CFO? Because essentially you're signing off on the financials, for lack of a better term.
That's correct. We do sign off on the financials. I think one of the number one responsibilities a treasurer has is to support the executive director in managing the finances of the nonprofit that you're involved in. Especially as a smaller nonprofit, you don't necessarily have a full-time CFO. Of course, your larger nonprofits do, and they function pretty much the same way as in the for-profit environment. But in the smaller situations, we're having to provide direct assistance to that executive director to manage the day-to-day financial end of the business.
And so does that mean, because obviously you do it on a part-time basis, and it's something that essentially you're volunteering your time to the organization, do you close books and records? Do you prepare checks? Do you do analytics? Is there strategic as well as tactical?
Definitely. I've had to get my hands dirty and get involved with all of that. Sure have. The executive directors sometimes will have a passion for what they're doing or the cause that they're involved in, and they might think they know more about the financials than they really do. So they do need somebody involved who knows a little bit more about the numbers and the day-to-day aspects of managing a practice.
And is the role of treasurer, being that it's a nonprofit and you are a 501c3,
correct,
which is a federal certification or registration, if you will, for purposes of alleviating any tax burden.
Correct.
Does that mean that a treasurer of a nonprofit becomes very familiar with tax rules and regulations?
I would say a treasurer needs to have an intimate relationship with a very good accountant.
Love that. So you'd have a CPA that you might go to for advice.
Correct.
Lovely. Okay. So what lessons have you learned during your time at the Georgia Cancer Foundation in terms of that treasury role or more fundraising, nonprofit? What lessons can you bring to our listeners?
Several, I think, Lorraine. That's a pretty good question, actually. Number one, I think I've learned, especially in the recent economic environment, is that cash is definitely still king. I'm not sure that a nonprofit can have too much cash. Frankly, with our fundraising sources drying up the way they have in the economy recently, it's been difficult to manage the day-to-day operation. So I would encourage a treasurer or CFO in the nonprofit to maintain as much cash as she possibly can. Also, if you can try to anticipate your trends early, this can be somewhat difficult. However, if you can take some time out of your schedule every month and try to look at the bigger picture of what's happening around you economically, you can try to forecast the amounts of cash that you might need, 6 months to 12 months down the line.
Is that particularly hard for a nonprofit versus a typical traditional sales-oriented environment because of donations maybe coming in seasonally?
True, very true. A lot of our donations do come toward the end of the year. And since we're all part-time and volunteers for that matter, it's very difficult to block the time to do that. So I think you actually need more frequent meetings than a typical nonprofit board would have, so that you can try to stay on top of those issues. And you do need to have good staff in place who can anticipate this, because they're in the trenches and seeing what's happening day to day. And especially on your fundraising side, you'll probably have somebody who focuses on the fundraising, so that person can give you great input into what's really happening in the financial environment.
Now, as the role of the treasurer for a nonprofit, does fundraising, albeit that it's in the relationship of finances and financing, is that the role that falls, or a role that falls under the treasurer, or typically would that fall under the executive director?
That'll fall under the executive director, or if you have enough revenue, you'll hire someone whose sole responsibility is to do that.
So you might have a separate person responsible for fundraising.
Correct, and we did. We have someone like that, and we do receive a lot of our revenue from grantors. So we have to have someone who knows how to write grant requests, who knows how to interface with those folks develop those kind of relationships, because in our foundation, about two-thirds of our revenue now is coming from grants, such as the Komen Foundation and others.
So this would be from larger organizations that will help you. Maybe they have a national focus or an international focus, and those monies will be assigned to you to be able to give to the Georgia market.
That's right.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about that grant-making policy, procedure. As treasurer, are you involved in the beginning of looking for that grant?
I am not actually involved in that. Our lady who works in that environment, she is in the environment day-to-day looking for those opportunities. It's actually a pretty tight-knit community in Georgia. So we've developed a pretty good relationship with our low-cost mammogram program, reputation with our program. So basically, the other organizations around the state know who we are. So her primary job is to identify these organizations and their funding capability. I have to help her build that into our budget.
I see.
So, yes, certain parts of the grant can be used for certain things. So, for example, if we receive, a large grant from one of the other organizations, a part of that will be earmarked for direct patient cost or care, so providing the mammogram services or the biopsies. Another piece might be earmarked for administrative issues or overhead, those kind of things. So I have to put that into the budget to make sure we actually spend the grant money where it's supposed to go.
So the grant documents essentially regulate or put parameters around how the money comes into you and what it should be designated for. In nonprofit vernacular, it's a restricted fund.
It is a restricted fund, correct. So we have to have great accounting systems in place to make sure we don't spend the money incorrectly.
And, of course, I'm thinking back to the corporate, typical for-profit world. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the customer saying to you, now I don't want you to spend my sales income on more the revenue from my company on admin?
Exactly.
I mean, that's that. Yeah. Nonprofits have an awful lot of challenge and complexities that for-profits do not have in that regard.
They sure do.
And so do you have separate bank accounts? Do you have separate general ledgers? Or do you have separate accounts within the general ledger?
Since we're relatively small, we opted for a separate account. It just made tracking a lot easier for us and for the accountant as well. So we earmarked that grant money into a separate bank account, basically, that we knew to run those expenses through and that revenue through. Now, if we were larger, I think we'd have more of a ledger accounting type system.
So you're keeping it separate so that you can trace the dollars, so to speak.
That's right.
Interesting. Well, what advice would you give to a nonprofit CFO or potentially somebody that we have in the economy today, a lot of very, very good finance talent that are out of work? Maybe they've just been misplaced from their employer, or it's been 6-12 months maybe. If they wanted to volunteer, what advice might you give to them?
Number one, you need to believe in the cause. If you don't have passion for the cause you volunteer for, sooner or later it's going to wear on you, and you're not going to love the work as much as you should, and you probably won't devote as much to it as the entity actually deserves.
Is that because it's particularly challenging?
It can be challenging, and you have some exposure to the people that you're trying to serve. So you have to have a heart for what you're really doing there. So I think that's number one, is to believe in the cause. And you'll have more of a passion for it, and you'll do a better job helping it manage its finances.
So that's the first item. Mm-hmm. Are there additional ones that you would suggest?
You really need to arrange your schedule accordingly. It will take more time than you think. There's no doubt about that. So if you go in thinking that you're going to maybe devote a day a month to it or 2 days a month to it, you're sorely mistaken. You're going to need to devote time to it every single week.
Do you tend to find that, and this perhaps is a general question, maybe rather than specifically to your nonprofit, but nonprofits, because they're very focused on cash in, cash out, and they have this seasonal demand structure in which to live, as well as the restricted supply of income and what it can be spent upon, do you find that nonprofits, by their nature, have a hard time hiring all the resources that they need, because really the money needs to go to the end purpose?
Definitely. Yeah, the flow of cash can be a challenge. And it does come in spurts for a lot of the nonprofits. Our grants are received only a couple of times a year. Our fundraising efforts happen when companies who raise money for us want to have an event, And, of course, the donors are giving money when they can, and sometimes that's more or less at the end of the year. So you will not have a regular stream of income.
Can nonprofits go get loans?
It's difficult to do. If you have a great cash position and a proven source of revenue, I think you could secure a line of credit. We tried to go down that road, and we were offered one, but the board basically decided that if we had to run that up, there'd be no way we could pay it off. So we opted not to secure the line.
I understand, because your cash inflow for the future years are not quite as certain.
Correct. And we've experienced a fair amount of regulatory changes, too, which really hurt our cash flow, which we can talk about that when you're ready.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that now. Sure. What sorts of regulation changes are you referring to?
Well, I'll back it up with a small amount of background. Up until a couple of years ago, our revenue sources came from three primary areas, and our biggest revenue source was continuing education for oncologists. And we had developed a great reputation in the state for that. So that was primarily supported by attendance fees and grants from pharmaceutical companies. Second was fundraising initiatives, primarily by companies in the area who also believed in our cause. And those actually still work pretty well today. And, of course, after that, we've had the grants that we've talked about, and those are still working pretty well, too. But two-thirds of our revenue was coming from the continuing education. And regulations changed in such a way that pharmaceutical companies could no longer support those in an unrestricted nature. So we were no longer able to take that money and use some of it for the supporting cost of providing these events.
So did that totally cut off your income flow? I mean, overnight, all of a sudden, you couldn't accept it?
It took about 12 months for this to work its way through our financials, and it eliminated about two-thirds of our revenue.
Yeah.
It was a very big source of our revenue, so we tried to anticipate that ahead of time, but the changes came so quickly that it was a challenge for us to reallocate our resources accordingly. So what we ended up having to do, unfortunately, was cut some of our services back, and we had to cut personnel at the same time.
So that means immediately the programs that you offered, and those were educational programs to oncologists.
Correct.
They've gone. So does that mean now that from the state of Georgia there is less education to those oncologists, or does that now mean that those oncologists have to go to a private source to go get the training?
They'll have to go to a private source. They sure will. Or if a pharmaceutical company has found a way to use unrestricted more restricted funds that are educational only in nature, they may be able to provide that. There are some for-profit groups that provide this level of education, and we were working with a few of those up until a couple of years ago. But I think it's going to be a more highly concentrated environment now for the oncologists to get their continuing education.
And all the while when the purpose for which you serve is to help people that perhaps are at the most dire time of their life.
Correct. And that's where our continuing education was so popular, because the oncologists knew that any profit, quote-unquote, if you will, that was derived from the seminar went to support the services we provided to underinsured Georgians. And that's where a lot of our money actually went to. So they were really sad to see that program go.
Sad for the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. Has those kinds of things, was that a Georgia state law, or was that something that more broadly impacted the whole of the U.S.?
That's federal. Yeah,
federal.
Definitely.
So other states are going to be having the same impact.
Correct. They probably already have.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about we've talked about how the Georgia Cancer Foundation acquires its funds. What changes have you seen over the recent years? We've talked about some of the regulation changes. Have there been any changes in terms of the economic impact and donor behavior, and or in terms of those other funds that you would have received through grants? Has there been any change there?
Definitely. Our receipts from donors are definitely declined. You know, the unemployment is so high now that people really don't have the resources to support charitable causes, so that we have definitely seen a decline in that environment. I think that's across the board, regardless of which field your nonprofit serves in. I think from the other side of that, from the grant side, we have seen a little bit of that dry up, but not quite so much. Most of our grantors were well-funded to begin with, and they're actually more of a national scope, so they devote certain funds to different states and that sort of thing. So if anything, that's really kept us up. One of our biggest saviors, though, has been a couple of companies in the Atlanta area that have really come to the plate with fundraising efforts through their companies that have carried us through some difficult times. So we kind of have a private relationship as well.
Would you like to mention those names? Is it appropriate that you might give them a kudos over the radio?
I think so. It's well known in the Atlanta area that Radiant Systems provides a significant amount of funding to us. They sponsor a run every spring that garners a significant amount of revenue. It's for a small business that has about 1,000 employees, the entire company really gets behind this initiative. We also did a bike race in the fall for the first time that went off really, really well. We anticipated it to raise about $30,000 to $35,000 for us, and it raised about $100.
That's
so
fabulous.
And when you think through those numbers, that might be small for a lot of nonprofits, but $100,000 for Georgia Cancer Foundation translates into about 300 more patients that we can serve.
And where within the state of Georgia are your clients and patients that you serve? Are there particular geographic locations or particular hospitals, or how does that work?
Correct. That's a great question. We do serve Georgians. A lot of our services that are provided in the metropolitan area. Basically, we're looking to help underinsured or uninsured people. So you will see a lot of minorities that we're serving. You'll see a lot of the Hispanic community that we're serving as well. So we do have language issues to deal with there, but we have an immense amount of volunteers that come in and help us with that. So we look for hospitals that are willing to provide services at a pre-contracted rate. So we negotiate that out every year and enter into contracts with them. They provide the services. They send us the bill. We pay the bill. That's basically how it works. So, a lady might be able to secure a mammogram for $20, whereas, without any insurance, she would have had to spend several hundred on that procedure.
Now, these preventative as well as for patients that may have learned they have cancer for cancer treatment?
Correct. Most of these are screenings. That's what we're trying to do. We try to educate the public, and we try to screen the segment of the public that might not otherwise have the screening services provided. If we do detect something in a mammogram and the patient needs a biopsy, we do have some funds set aside for that as well. But a biopsy can cost as much as $2,000. So we do have to earmark some funds for that. But again, an uninsured person will not be able to afford that.
So let's give you the opportunity to talk a little bit more about some of your services. You've talked mm-hmm. about the breast cancer area. Are there other areas of cancer that you feel would be important for the listeners to be aware of?
We would like to broaden our services out to prostate cancer. That is one of the leading cancers that men encounter, and our executive director has indicated he'd like to move us in that direction at some point in time. We're not quite there yet, but we'd like to find a way to take our low-cost mammogram program and morph that into a prostate screening program if possible.
So if we have any executives or wealthy individuals or corporations listening that might like to reach out to you, let me give you the opportunity to tell them how they do so.
Definitely. The simplest way to reach out to us would just simply be to email me direct at mike@fnaplanners.com, like Frank Nancy Apple, planners.com. Or they can simply call me at 770-826-7175.
Great. And the website for Georgia Cancer Foundation?
Is www.gacancerfoundation.org.
Terrific. And so to any of our listeners that might like to learn more about your programs, those are ways in which you can reach the organization. Well, let's talk, Mike, a little bit more about some of the administration and administrative issues that face nonprofits. We've talked a little bit about restriction of funds. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've got, as any business has, whether it's a for-profit or a nonprofit, you have funds coming in, you have funds coming out. But you have certain restrictions and administration challenges just by the nature of nonprofit. What are they?
Correct. We do. Specifically related to our grant writing, we do actually have to perform formal audits every year. We'd love to just do financial reviews, so forth, but we actually have to have a full audit every year.
And so you have to pay one of the CPA firms to perform an audit and sign off on an opinion?
Correct. We do.
And so that's a cost burden as well as an investment of people and time.
That's right. That's right. Of course, we have the usual 990 to file every year.
And that's the tax form.
That's the tax form. And, of course, we have to maintain the 501c3 designation to make sure we don't fall into the taxable world. That's more of a filing issue. It's not really that much of a requirement. But our main administrative requirements tax-wise fall back to the audit and the bookkeeping and those sorts of things, which do require a fair amount of resources and staff time to do. So, you know, with staff devoted to the cause, they don't necessarily like to devote time to the administrative side. So we did have to hire somebody who was committed, you know, more organizationally and administratively, and who was more detail-oriented to handle that, so that our grant writer and our mammogram program administrator could devote more time to their services.
Wonderful. Well, hopefully following this program, not only will you have some people that potentially are put their hand in the pot to volunteer, mm-hmm. but maybe we have some potential donors out there that can help provide some of the funding to support
sure.
some of these.
I hope so.
So what have the recent economic difficulties affect have the recent economic difficulties affected those that you serve? We've talked about the impact on you as an organization. I can't begin to think of the tragedy of having cancer or thinking that you might have cancer yourself. But is that something that is more prevalent in an economic downturn, or are there implications from the downturn?
Definitely. I think that would be a challenge for anyone to go through, especially if they've lost their job or been laid off, and then to find out you've got cancer on top of that. And even though the cancer treatments have progressed so much, so that being cured is much more likely than not being cured, here in the Big C is still devastating to someone. So when you add that on top of losing their job or having economic difficulty, it can be devastating to that family. So we have seen an increase, actually, in the number of requests for our services over the last year and a half.
And do you think that perhaps is a function of people being let go from their employers and maybe no longer having insurance?
I do. COBRA, you know, maintains their insurance for a while.
If the individual can afford it.
If they can afford it, which, you know, that runs 102% of the cost of the premium, which, you know, a lot of times their employer was picking most of that up to begin with. So, you know, that's a major cost for a person to pick up on their own. So a lot of, if they can't afford their insurance and they let it go, or if they have just major med, then, you know, that's where their issues come into play. So, you know, we have seen an increase in requests for our services as well. And a side service that we provide to people at Rain is basically to, you know, wigs and bra fittings, those sorts of things for ladies who've gone through that already. And that's just a complimentary service we provide. So oncology practices will refer people into us for that. And we've seen increases in that as well. So, you know, it's really across the board. People are hurting at the moment. So we're glad we can step in and pick that up for them.
Understand. And to what extent has the new healthcare legislation either impacted or potentially about to impact your organization and the work that you do?
You know, like most CFOs, I would say we'd love to know the answer to that question. There are so many unwritten regulations now that we really don't have a good handle on how this is going to impact us. However, I think from a financial perspective, we probably will not see too much of an impact in our organization. Since we're funded from outside sources, basically, and we contract with hospitals to provide the mammogram screenings and so forth, I think we're okay there. If anything, we're going to see a heavier administrative burden with more paperwork filing and more regulations to make sure we comply with.
So, again, we're back to administration burden and cost.
Exactly. And, of course, every dollar we have to spend on this is a dollar we can't spend helping the community. And, you know, that's just the board obviously does not like to go in that direction, but I don't think we're going to have a choice. You know, the regulations are basically taking us in that direction.
And is that administration very much a heavy manual burden? Is it people's time, or is it a case of investing in systems?
Both. It's both. Yeah, well, I'm sure there's some systems upgrades that we're going to have to make to comply with that. I'm sure there's some kind of filing requirements we'll have to comply with, where we have to keep sorts of, you know, books and records more than we used to. And I know we'll have to devote more staff time to it.
And then, of course, the audit firm's sure. going to want to go look at all those extra pieces of paper.
Yep, they're going to have to.
Yeah, yeah. So the role of the treasurer is very much one of overseeing an administration task as well as a mm-hmm. financial task.
Definitely.
Interesting. So what is your number one lesson that you would give for a CFO when working in a nonprofit? We've talked about knowledge of tax. We've talked about knowledge of the filing and the regulations. We've talked about cash flow king, mm-hmm. being critical.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any pieces of advice that you might think of somebody, potentially they're looking to go from what was previously a for-profit business corporation, and now they're looking to go into a nonprofit?
Great question. Basically, I think if you're hired, cash is king. I think that's the number one tip I could give someone, is to make sure you have enough cash in this business to carry you for a while. If I can give two extras on the side, I think number two would be to have a good team surrounding you that can provide you the information and the systems that you need. And, of course, love the cause that you devote yourself to. Now, for someone who's looking to transition into that area, I would say if at all possible, if you can look at the finances before you go in, so you can at least see how much this organization can support administratively, you really just want to make sure you're going to get your paycheck.
You mentioned cash is king a couple of times there.
Mm-hmm.
If the nonprofit itself is heavily focused on cash, in some regard, it is perhaps more ordinarily than any other company, real cash,
mm-hmm.
not just large corporations, wire transfers, and so forth.
Sure.
Is there a potential inherent risk within nonprofits that there may be cash, let's call it seepage?
You have to be diligent in your systems and still remain tight with your controls. Yeah.
So what kind of additional controls would you put in place? My background, I've done a lot of auditing in very heavily regulated and to some extent non-regulated situations such as these. And my experience has found is that churches, nonprofits, these kind of organizations that are very heavily dependent upon real cash, pennies, dollars, and so forth, and maybe credit card payments, they are more open to people diverting the funds. What
sure.
additional controls do you need to put in place?
Still limit the number of people that are authorized to access the account. You limit the number of debit cards you issue, have minimum thresholds for check requests, that sort of thing. I think you have to maintain tight controls on those. If folks feel like they've got ready access to the cash of the business, they may be more frivolous in what they spend the money on. So you'll need to have some policies in place that outline what you can and cannot spend money on.
And that's good business control.
True.
For
yeah.
whether you've got cash or you don't, but perhaps
exactly.
it's more important.
I think you should try to manage your nonprofit as if it's in the middle of a recession, even when times are going well.
Now, do you take that one step further? Should a nonprofit perhaps have more focus on making sure that you do credit checks on your employees? Maybe you do this initially, but now you've got a population where you've got volunteers helping you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, for your employees, I think you at a minimum, you have to have some kind of a background check. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
And what about bonding and insurances along those lines? Is that something that a nonprofit treasurer should consider?
We actually have to have that. Yep, to comply with our audits, we have to have a surety bond in place.
Tell us a little bit, what does that mean? Because a lot of our listeners may not have perhaps heard of that term.
Surety bond? Yeah, that's something you can obtain through a property and casualty agent or your carrier. But basically, it provides a level of insurance against any kind of fraud that might take place in your business or misappropriation of funds. And typically, it's a fraction of or a percentage of your revenue or your cash balances, and you pay a small premium for that based on that. They're usually fairly inexpensive.
So that's a good, wise, and cautious step to make.
True.
Now, in terms of the controls, and you've mentioned a couple of times systems, just out of curiosity, what system do you use to account for your information?
Such as accounting?
Yes,
so
accounting.
Forth. I believe we're using Peachtree accounting
okay.
at the moment.
Okay, so it's a pretty
yep.
substantial, mm-hmm. very well-heeled accounting package.
Correct.
Are there any particular aspects of budgeting and forecasting that bring in any particular nuances for the nonprofit that might cause you to look at a particular way of recording, controlling?
I think primarily the grants, you have to focus there and be a little more unique in your analysis there, because that money is restricted money, so you have to be sure you account for that in your forecasting and don't rely too heavily on the amount of money that goes to your direct patient costs.
Now, would a grant even specify timing as well as category of spend, if you will?
They're usually good for a year. Yep, it depends on the grant. Every grant's different, but all of our grants run on a 12-month cycle. So we basically have to spend that money within 12 months or ask to keep it or return it. But it's never been a problem for us not to spend it.
understand, because the need's always there.
That's right.
The need's always there. So do you ever get to a time where the influx and the outflux is just the numbers aren't tying? Maybe the donor said they were going to give you money at a particular date and then the check doesn't come. What do you do?
You don't have the access
to the line of credit that other CFOs would talk about.
That's right. That's why we have to have some cash to keep us afloat until that happens. Thankfully for us, though, that's not really been an issue. However, we've tried to make sure we've got an adequate reserve just in case that takes place.
And you would always maintain those cash reserves.
We hope to. You know, with our revenue being down so much, we've had to go into those reserves, and that's what's kept us afloat for the last couple of years, is we had to go into that. So, you know, but we scaled back our programs. We focused on what we know we do well and on what can sustain itself, actually. So, we're basically at a point now where the only programs we offer are ones that are self-sustaining.
So if there is a word to that CFO that wants to take on the role, there may be an element of maybe getting your hands a little bit more dirty than the role that that person played before. And it may be a focus on controls, focus on cash, and a new found love of the tax function.
Definitely.
Well, this has been an absolute pleasure, Mike. I'd like to wrap up in terms of we have a tradition on our radio show to always ask, what is your CFO tip of the month? What's yours?
Definitely. Block time regularly to work on the business rather than being in the business day to day. Be a strategic thinker.
And can you do that as a volunteer, or is that where the tough balance comes in?
If you're employed by someone, get permission from your employer. If you run your own business, you've got control.
I love that. Well, that is a fabulous tip. And I'd like to thank you, Mike Tarrant, for being our guest today, sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. Thank you also to our contributors for the news element, United States Department of Labor. And thanks to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, please go to www.delaneyllc.com. SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small and medium-sized companies. For more information on those products, please go to www.sap.com. This and other thought leadership about today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. And if you are a CFO and would like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via the web. You'll find a link out there to go click on us. And thanks to listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.